Malolele, you're listening to Dateline from RNZ Pacific. I'm Koroi Hawkins. Coming up...
We're working very closely with New Zealand health authorities to determine the status of whether there is any community spread in New Zealand.
Cook Islands cautious about resuming New Zealand flights after the latest COVID-19 community case.
It is about healing the body, mind, spirit and soul with the strength of culture.
The world's largest secondary school's Pacific Cultural Festival is back for 2021 after a year-long absence. Also, new research looks at the pressures climate change is putting on Pacific urbanisation and...
No tournament appearance for us means no money as well, and in terms of sponsorship.
Pacific Sevens teams stuck in limbo are relying on local competitions to stay match fit. The Cook Islands government have deferred a flight from Auckland that was scheduled for today for Rarotonga in response to the recent community case of COVID-19 in Northland. 30 Cook Islanders were expected on the flight, which will now depart on the next scheduled Air New Zealand flight on Saturday at no extra cost. The Cook's cabinet met on Tuesday to discuss the ramifications of the recent community case and their plans moving forward. Sailor Jane Hopgood spoke with Cook Islands Prime Minister Mark Brown, who says they're taking a wait-and-see approach to the resumption of flights from New Zealand.
We're working very closely with New Zealand health authorities to determine the status of whether there is any community spread in New Zealand, and all indications so far are positive. However, there were some remaining results yet to come in as of last night, and we had to make a decision on the passengers. So we decided last night to defer any of those passengers until Saturday's flight, just as a precaution while we await the remaining tests that New Zealand is waiting on to give us an assurance at this stage that there is no community transmission.
And how soon are you going to hear back from New Zealand in regards to those results?
Well, we're hopeful that within the day or 24 hours, we should know a little more to enable us to make a decision then on what our response will be in regard to Saturday's flight that's coming into the Cook Islands.
What reassurance has New Zealand Ministry of Health told you that gives you peace of mind to continue business in your country?
Well, it really comes down to the testing regime that New Zealand has. Both of our countries have in place, you know, standard operating procedures and protocols that has allowed the first leg of quarantine-free travel between our two countries. You know, the basis of that is testing, but also communication between our two health agencies. And currently that work is continuing very, very well. So if anything changes in the testing results that come through, then of course we would have to change our response in regards to passengers coming in from New Zealand. But at this stage, if the situation remains as it is, we're hopeful for normal service to resume on Saturday.
By deferring flights or by making changes to the incoming flights from New Zealand, has that made a dramatic impact on the operations there in the Cook Islands in terms of the airports and the quarantine facilities?
No, this is something that we have built in and expected, that if the situation in New Zealand changes, if there is a case of a community outbreak, then an appropriate response by the Cook Islands would take place. And there'll be a range of different responses in that. It's important that we are able to demonstrate that we can pivot very quickly in the event of a case coming out, and we can respond appropriately to try and mitigate the risk of COVID coming into our country.
That was Sailor Jane Hopgood speaking with Cook Islands Prime Minister Mark Brown. The world's largest secondary school's Pacific Cultural Festival, Auckland Polyfest, is back for 2021. Polyfest now marks its 45th year after COVID cancelled 2020 and the Christchurch terror attacks disrupted 2019. Significant financial challenges were overcome to bring this year's festival together, and event director Seuli Terry Leo Mau spoke with Dominic Godfrey about what people can expect at Polyfest 2021 and started with some of the challenges following recent cancellations.
I guess we were in jeopardy. There was a lot of toing and froing with the financials and just trying to get the financials for this event. So, yeah, we're really excited that we can finally announce that Polyfest is ready to go in April.
So you've got some good partners behind you that have helped you get back on your feet financially.
Yes, so of course our ASB, our naming rights sponsor, is back with us again. We've been really honoured to actually get some of the funding from our government agencies, in particular the Ministry of Culture and Heritage, who had put into the budget last year the Pacific Festivals Fund. It's been really good. I think through that whole process of looking at funding, we also got to meet other providers and other the counterparts, my counterparts, who are also running festivals around the country and going through the same thing.
How has this affected this year's festival in terms of what's going to be on offer?
I guess we really wanted to make sure that we just provide a platform for our students to come and perform and express themselves. What's really been affected, I guess, is just making sure that we manage and have a good COVID-19 plan going into this event. So what I guess it does look at is that our budget doesn't cater just to the normal in-person festival on site at Manukau Sports Bowl. It's actually also exploring a digital strategy that looks at a virtual event should we happen to lock down again.
The theme of this year, you're continuing last year's theme, of course, because last year didn't happen. This seems even more appropriate now than for last year.
Yeah, it does. I mean, thanks, Dominic, for that. It is about healing the body, mind, spirit and soul with the strength of culture. And the board were very adamant that we needed to continue with the theme. I guess it also allows the students, because they already put together performances for this particular theme, it meant that they could repurpose and reuse the performances that they already had prepared for 2020, or just polish up or add in some new components as they prepare for this year.
And there's two less stages this year, right?
Yes, as part of our COVID-19 plan, we wanted to spread out our stall holders and our stages just a little bit more. So two of our stages are no longer running, but they have been combined with another stage. And we're also combining our speech competitions for the Pacific stages.
Polyfest, ASB Polyfest, it's the largest festival of its kind in the world, isn't it?
Yes, it is.
That's amazing.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's something that, yeah, we as Aucklanders, as New Zealanders, should be proud of, that we've got this festival that is the biggest of its kind. It was celebrated in one of the UNESCO magazines a couple of years ago as one of the best cultural events in the world. So, we've got something very special here, Dominic.
Event Director Seuli Teri Leo Mau. ASB Polyfest is on at Auckland's Manukau Sports Bowl from the 14th to the 17th of April. The pressures of climate change in the Pacific's cities and towns will be the focus of a new project about to get underway. Those behind the Victoria University project, which has received $870,000 in Marsden grant funding, says there's an urgent need to address urbanisation pressures they say are harming ecosystems and well-being. Lillian Hanley reports.
Pacific countries are rapidly urbanising, but these cities are also bearing the brunt of climate change. The deputy head of Victoria University School of Architecture, Maybrit Peterson-Zari, is one of the project's leads. She says most of the thinking about nature-based solutions to urbanisation comes from Europe or the US.
Our concern is that it's sort of like a transplanting of these ideas from other places, and that without Indigenous ecological knowledge driving it, it becomes less effective and less about centering the well-being of the people who are actually in the Pacific.
Dr. Peterson-Zari says centering Indigenous knowledge and local solutions is crucial to making it work. Most adaptation research in the region focuses currently on rural or coastal areas, she says, which misses a big population.
A lot of the Pacific is actually really urbanised. In some parts of the Pacific, the vast majority of the population live in the towns. So nature-based solutions in an urban context might be things like green architecture or green roofs or green walls or looking at moving informal settlements back from riparian zones.
There will be five different case studies, two in Aotearoa and one each in Kiribati, Vanuatu and Samoa. Team members across the islands will work together remotely, given they can't travel because of the pandemic. Anita Latai-Nusulu, a lecturer in geography at the National University of Samoa, is one of them. One of her main interests is climate change resilience at the community level. What solutions do they already have?
It sort of matches what I would say the older Indigenous knowledge or the older Samoan knowledge. I'm thinking about our climate-friendly, open Samoan whale that you find at the beach. Forested areas and green spaces that are disappearing from the landscape that are closer to Napia.
Nusulu says urban planning policies in Samoa are very weak. Some areas are doing okay, while others are completely uncontrolled. She says she hopes the knowledge gained by the research can start influencing policy.
My hope is that there is a better understanding that in dealing with climate change, it requires going back to the basics about how the environment works and how the environment could in itself help us adapt. And I think that does not work at the moment if we do not have policies that support those kinds of ideas.
Ultimately, Victoria University's Maybrit Peterson-Zari says the motivation is to centre Indigenous people's well-being.
And because the Pacific, it's so intertwined with land and marine ecologies, you can't really separate those things. So by strengthening the health of ecosystems, you are strengthening enabling culture to remain strong.
The project kicks off in March. Ko Lillian Hanley, tēnei.
Pacific Island Sevens teams are relying on local competitions to stay match fit as COVID-19 continues to crush hopes of a return to the international stage. The men's and women's World Sevens series remain on hold with global borders and international travel shut down. Fiji have already secured their spot in the men's and women's Olympic Sevens in Tokyo, but Samoa have yet to qualify. I'm joined by RNZ Pacific sports reporter Vinny Wiley. So Vinny, we saw Super Rugby and Test matches return last year. Is there any hope for the seven-a-side game?
Well, it's looking pretty shaky, obviously, at the moment because, you know, the Seven Series was launched 22 years ago and it's built its success and its business model on exactly that, being a world event, travelling the world, passports in and out of one city to the next. The Wellington Sevens used to be here where we're talking, of course, Las Vegas, London, Paris, Tokyo, you know, stopping up all these places around the world. Good popular crowds, and that's just not feasible at the moment with COVID, clearly. And even, you know, once the vaccine comes in, there's still a lot of uncertainty around that. So everybody's just parked at home basically right now and trying to manage as best as they can. So the World Series got cut short early last year, the previous season. And as far as this year goes, it would normally have started in November. We're already in January, and there's no word as to when these teams are going to be able to get back on the field.
And also linked to that, the International Olympic Committee remains adamant the Tokyo Games will go ahead in July. Is that feasible?
Well, there's a lot of uncertainty about the Olympics in general. Of course, Sevens is now a part of that. 2016 was their debut. Fiji won the gold medal. It was an incredible moment for Sevens, for rugby, for Fiji, their national sport, effectively. Will they get that opportunity to defend it? It looks difficult because while countries like Fiji have already qualified, take Samoa, for example, who haven't. So there's meant to be a final qualification tournament over in Monaco in June. Now, all of this has already been delayed from last year because of COVID. Well, how can they prepare for that tournament? Are they going to be able to get to Monaco? Will they get an allowance to get in there? Can the other countries get there? So if they can't, then you've got to determine who deserves to go to the Olympics in those final qualifying places. It gets pretty messy. And we've seen it with the Australian tennis. Like, it's one thing to be in a city ready to play, but are you actually match fit? Are you match ready? So fitting all these countries into one place at the same time and actually match fit and ready, if the Olympics goes ahead, great. But they've got to qualify first and they've got to be there. So for countries like Samoa, they don't even have the peace of mind that they're in the tournament, even if it did go ahead.
And how are the likes of Fiji and Samoa coping amidst all this uncertainty?
Well, Fiji are probably the most blessed because not only are they the defending Olympic champions and they're already qualified for Tokyo, they'd love to be playing on the World Series, of course. At the moment, their players are all just at home playing domestically. But, you know, there's such depth in the Fijian game that they've got some really strong domestic tournaments that's keeping them fit. And at the weekend just gone, they had the inaugural Fiji Rugby Super 7 Series in Singatoka, which is the modelled on the World Series competition. So they're trying to keep that sort of competition alive and mirror the World Series to try and be as ready as they can be if the World Series resumes or in the lead up to the Olympics. Samoa have just had some trials and they've done a lot of training and they've just trimmed down their national squads for the men's and women's. Of course, they're leading into that Monaco tournament, but they usually have a contracted set of players for the men's team, at least, that is on the World Series. But the general manager of high performance for the Samoa Rugby Union, Siumanu Douglas Nalchan, says that things are tough financially all round, especially for them. So they've had to make some sacrifices.
We've removed the contract that we've used to sign with our players due to the uncertainty. No tournament appearance for us means no money as well, and in terms of sponsorship, because that's the struggle we're facing as a union. Our sponsors are pulling out.
So it's pretty tough on the ground financially for these unions, especially the Pacific unions that are a lot smaller. Fortunately, both of them are playing domestically at the moment with their club sides and whatnot, so they're getting some decent competition, actually probably better than what's happening here in New Zealand or some of the other major Sevens nations. But yeah, it's a huge jump to go from that to international competition, and there's just kind of no guarantees, no nothing, no certainty at that moment on the horizon. So it's very much a waiting game and just watch the space, but it's looking a bit sketchy.
Thanks, Vinny. That was sports reporter Vinny Wiley. And that's Dayline. There's more on our website, rnzi.com, and you can listen to this program again as a podcast wherever you get your podcasts. Tō whā.